Oh, yeah, like, no one likes to listen to their own voice, right?
Yeah.
Like, I would have thoroughly put myself in that category of, like, oh, I sound terrible. But I'd have to do it, like, at least two times through, more like three times through each episode, and at that point, it's like, well, I'm just listening to my own voice, it's fine.
Jeez.
Yeah, jeez. I don't know how our listeners do it.
Well, they don't have to, they don't live inside our heads, at least I assume they don't. That's the thing, you never want to hear the voice... Mm-hmm. That is there, attached to your own head.
There was that one listener, but that really creeped me out.
Yeah. Welcome to the Trade Waiters. Today's episode is Ghosts by Raina Telgemeier.
Yay!
Hooray! Do we start with character revealing questions?
I think so.
Okay, so since this was my pick this week, I've decided to start with a character revealing question so you can get to know the people who are telling you about the book a little bit more. And my question is, when you were growing up, was there a festival in your hometown that you really looked forward to?
That's really interesting. Well, I know that when I was... Oh, sorry.
Who are you?
Yeah, sorry. Let's do this right. Okay. Hi, I'm Jeff Ellis. And when I was in elementary school, they actually did a thing on Chinese New Year. So I learned all about the Zodiac calendar. I learned that I'm a monkey. And I learned about the Dragon Parade. And, that was a lot of fun. And then, like, for a couple years, we'd have Chinese New Year be a thing we did at elementary school. We'd, like, make little paper dragons and, like, give each other red envelopes with things we, like, made inside of them. And, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Sweet.
Yeah.
That's nice.
I have no stories like that from when I was in elementary school.
Who are you?
We always get that part wrong.
I'm Jonathan Dalton, and I went to elementary school in the town of Medicine Hat, Alberta, where nothing ever happens. And so I didn't really... There wasn't, like, an annual festival or anything until much later in my life when I lived in other places. I think probably when I went to Taiwan, that was the first thing I can remember where there was annual events that were exciting and interesting. But by that time, I was an adult, so it's not the same.
Right.
I'm Kay Gross, and I grew up in Toronto, and I guess there are a lot of festivals, and we never went to any of them, because my parents are very much like me in that we don't like large crowds. But the one thing I looked forward to every year growing up was, like, the weekend where we had the lawn sale. And it was, like, the whole neighborhood had their, like, yard sale, lawn sale, and, like, had all their... junk out front, and that was magical.
Well, I guess I'm an outlier. I'm Angela Mellick, and I grew up in Montreal, which is also huge for festivals. Every year, I think my favorite one that I look forward to was Juste pour Rire, or the For Laughs Comedy Festival, which was so fun. It's funny reflecting back on this, the fact that I hate crowds so much, but I love going to the Comedy Fest. You could walk from booth to booth, and there would just be stand-up comedians there. And half of them were in French. So your French better be good enough to understand a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
And then right on the heels of that was always the jazz festival. And I love jazz. And it definitely instilled in me a lifelong love of jazz. And same thing, you could go downtown. There was so much international spectacle, people from all over the world coming to listen to jazz. And you could just walk around. There'd be people on the street playing every type of jazz you can imagine.
Oh,
and then
wow.
Right after that was fireworks, right? And in the winter... We also got to have a lot of winter festivals because it was cold. And so it wasn't quite on the same scale as Carnival, which was in Quebec City. Mm. But we had our own little Montreal versions of Carnival with Le Bonhomme de Neige and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
So there was definitely a seasonal festival thing happening in Montreal, which was a lot of fun when I was a kid.
Leave it to French Canada to have all the culture.
Party time. Yeah. Party time Québécois.
I saw a stand-up comedian from Montreal, and he was saying that Just for Laughs has contributed to people not taking police officers seriously, because everyone just assumes it's all a hidden camera prank.
Just for us, it's amazing, though, because they specifically structure their jokes so that you don't need to know any language, and so they show it all over the world. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've traveled, and Just for Laughs gags has been on the background just because it's this universal thing that people can appreciate. But anyway, the reason that I wanted to bring up festival culture is because festivals have a huge bearing on the plot of Ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like me to tell you a little bit more?
Yes, please.
I know we haven't done spoiler warnings in a while, but maybe we should just let people know that we are going to be talking about the entire book, because this book is brand new.
It's true.
So it's possible listeners have not actually read the book yet.
And there are definitely things to be spoiled in this book, so I would recommend. I picked this book up and I could not put it down. It's a quick read, and it's a lot of fun. So go see Ghosts.
Yeah, read it first and then listen to this episode.
Yeah.
Just hit pause. Find it on, I don't know if this is on Comixology. I guess it is.
It is. It's on Comixology.
Okay, there you go.
I got it through a Kindle app as well.
Okay.
I pre-ordered it and had it downloaded to my iPad the next day after we decided to do this book, basically.
Yeah, same.
This is
awesome.
I think, our most accessible book yet, because I could just walk into any random bookstore and count on it being, like, at the front of the bookstore in a big display.
Yeah, I was in Victoria over the weekend visiting my parents, and we went downtown to Monroe's, and they had a big Raina Telgemeier exhibit in the front window.
And this is definitely where I wanted to start. The fact that Raina Telgemeier is the new dynamo in the world of comics, I think it's a story that gets not enough play. The fact that she has basically changed the landscape of comics for young readers and for the book world at large. So I wanted to go back and talk a bit about how this happened. Raina graduated from the School of Visual Arts and Illustration, and at the time she says she was the only woman in her class.
Wow.
They didn't even have a comics program, so she was just kind of clutch this together with illustration. And from there, she started out making her own autobio minis while working in a non-art-related job.
I have some of those. I have original Raina Telgemeier mini comics signed. If I had a vault, I would put them in a vault.
Nice. Well, she started doing that very early on in her career, but she already started to garner quite a bit of attention. So in 2003, she was nominated for the Ignatz Award of Promising New Talent and Outstanding Mini Comic. So you have a signed Outstanding New Mini Comic from Raina when she was just a promising new talent. Oh, and then later on, she was nominated for an Eisner in 2005 for talent deserving of wider recognition, which I agree, but I think she's holding her own at this point. In 2004, while she was working on the Babysitter's Club comics, she started writing Smile, which was an autobio based on her dental experiences as a middle school teenager. And it's definitely formed the foundation of her work, I feel, this middle school era and how much it changed and shaped her life. So 2004, Smile started being serialized, and then from 2006 to 2008, she released four Babysitter Club books that were illustrated by her but written by Scholastic authors that I didn't write down.
Well, it's the original author of Babysitter's Club is credited.
Yes, okay. So I didn't know if there was an adaptation author. Is Raina the only adapter?
I think it's just her adapting the original books.
They're great. I have one of her Babysitter's Club's books as well.
So. I've read them all. They're excellent.
They're wonderful. So from then on, she went to demolish everything. she's released the trade paperback version of Smile in 2010. It went on to win the Boston Globe Horn Book Award, which is the first time a graphic novel has ever won that award. And it also won the Eisner Award for Best Publication for Teens. 2 years later, she followed that up with Drama, which won the 2013 Stonewall Book Award from the ALA, and Sisters in 2014 won the Eisner in 2015 for Best Writer Artist. And then in 2015, Telgemeier's works took all four spots on the New York Times bestseller list. And that was in May of 2015, and then she decided to release her next work, Ghosts. So the morning that Ghosts released, it's debuted at number 13 of all books on Amazon.
Wow.
And that should give you an impression of the impact that her work has had. At the time of this recording, it is currently number 1, and it has been for the past 3 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. And just scanning the rest of the list, Drama is number 2, Smile's number 6, Sisters is number 8, there's a Babysitter's Club book rounding out the top 10. So Raina is changing the face of comics, and I'm so excited that we get to dive into her next work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's her books are definitely on that list of the very still very short list of graphic novels that are in every classroom, well, like within a certain age range, that virtually every kid within a certain age range has read.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so can we start off with your overall impressions?
Sure. I guess I'll go first. I've never read any Raina Teglmeyer, and I was really excited to start reading because I knew very little about her, so that's a great introduction. I feel like I've been living under a rock.
Deserving of wider recognition.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's funny because, I mean, definitely I could get this sense that she's a pretty big deal because, like, while I was downloading this, I could already see friends, like, tweeting about, like, got my copy of Ghosts that aren't even doing Trade Waiters. So I'm like, okay, so this is a book everyone's just seeking out, so this is great. Yeah, it was really delightful, and I think the big thing for me is I actually was thinking to myself, this is something I could read with my nephew in the future. Like, it's just a nice, accessible book that you can, like, give to a child to introduce them to comics and kind of get them started early, because, you know, you want to get your kids started early on comics. Parents,
raise them young.
Yeah, start them young on their comics. Yeah, no, and I was actually really impressed with just the depth of a lot of the topics and the themes. Like, it deals with cystic fibrosis, which I'd never really thought about before, so, like, that was really interesting for me, and it deals with the Day of the Dead Festival. So, yeah, there's a lot of really, really cool stuff going on in this book. So, yeah, overall, like, I really enjoyed reading this a lot.
Great.
Yeah.
John?
Okay. Well, I enjoyed this a lot. I like all of Raina's books. I think drama is still my favorite. Drama is fantastic. That's a pretty high standard to meet. And this is definitely pretty close. Like, it deals with some difficult subject matter in, I think, a very smart way for the age of the audience that's going to be reading it. And I'll go into that more later, but basically, yeah, it was great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Raina Teglmeyer. I've been reading her work since I was the target demographic age of reading her work. I have very fond memories of being at TCAF 2007 and getting to chat with her a little bit as a 13-year-old. I was 13, I guess. And I started off with the Babysitter Club books, and I'd never read the actual books, but I was like, comics, I guess I'll read them. And they were fantastic, and then I loved Smile, and Drama is, like, one of my favorite comics, I think, of all time. It's just so good. So I was extremely excited to go and pick up Ghosts. And this was such a sweet and touching book. I definitely teared up a bunch reading it, because if you want to make me cry, get me to read a book about a terminally ill child. But like John was saying, like, there are some really deep things that get spoken about in a really empathetic and smart way, and just really easy to get into and think about. And it's just a gorgeous book. The guy who does the colors, Braden Lamb, does a great job, and it's
gorgeous.
So well married to her art
yeah.
that it's just visually such a fun book to read.
Awesome.
Colors are amazing.
I'm so happy to hear that you guys enjoyed it. For me, I pre-ordered it, same as Jeff, on comics, or it was on Kindle, and had it downloaded, and I opened the file just to make sure it downloaded, and I could not put it down. I was up until about 1 a.m. just reading this book, because
oh, wow.
It just drew me in so immediately. But I wanted to start the discussion with a quote from a Cosmo article that came out recently on Raina, which sets, I think, really well the context of this work. Beyond just her meteoric rise to success. I'm always thinking, this is Raina speaking, I'm always thinking about the kinds of stories I want to tell. I have notebooks and documents with sentences written down or sketches of characters. Sometimes those ideas gel into a story very quickly. Sometimes they can take 5 or 10 years. I had been thinking about the characters in my new book, Ghosts, since 2002. I started getting really interested in the Day of the Dead and how that tradition helps people process death in a way that celebrates life and memories. Then, in 2012, I had a young cousin who passed away from a brain tumor. She was 13. She was this joyous, beautiful girl who was the one convincing everyone else that it was going to be okay. And in Ghosts, the little girl Maya has cystic fibrosis. Telling this story helped me to process grief. I thought if I could write about the ways to cope with illness, there would be tons of kids and families who could relate. And I think that's a really strong goal. And it's true. I've read Smile, and I've read a few others of Raina's work. I haven't read Drama yet. But what really stood out to me in this work was that it did seem to have a very concrete goal, and it was executed with almost surgical precision, I think, to great effect. I was crying. I was sad. And I really love the message. I don't think it's dealt with very directly in a lot of work that is especially accessible to young readers.
I think there's probably enough chapter books on the subject. At least once you get to a certain level of like reading ability, there are definitely books that cover this topic, but I don't think they tend to be as accessible as a comic. Mm-hmm. And so I think this might be, for a lot of kids, their first experience reading a book that actually has something to say about the fact that life doesn't go on forever.
Mm-hmm.
Or for everyone.
Yeah. Well, and I think that, I mean, something I found really compelling is just the fact that you have, like, Maya, who's probably, you know, the age of one of your kind of audience members, and she's the one who's kind of got this terminal illness, right? So I feel like if you're a child reading this, that I think is very powerful, where you're reading about a person your own age who might die very, you know, early in their life, where when you're a child, you're used to sort of assuming that, oh, well, that'll happen when I'm really, really old, so I don't have to worry about that right now, where it's much more immediate in the story here.
Mm-hmm. And I think kids who have someone that they know who are like facing life-threatening situations don't have a lot of first-hand or second-hand experience with this, but from the little bit that I've seen and experienced, I think, at least I get the impression that they feel very isolated, because this is not the experience of most kids. And so putting a story like this in a book, where you can just read a book, and it's like a window into someone else's life, I think that's a great way of communicating ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And despite the weight of this subject matter, I thought Raina did a really excellent job balancing it with other, let's say, childhood concerns. I thought there was a lot about sisterhood, which is a source of material that I think is her strength. There was a lot about moving to a new school and making new friends. And so there was a balance of concerns that a kid in their life is going to be going through. And there was just this, let's call it like background radiation of like this very aggressive ticking clock and source of fear and anxiety within their whole family. And it's funny that Maya is, you know, the source of light in everyone's life. She's mm-hmm. the most optimistic one. And this is obviously pretty directly inspired from Raina's experiences based on what she's told us.
I was so mm-hmm. worried all the way through this book that Maya would die by the end of the book.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
I will say that I actually, maybe this is just like my own sort of shortcomings in my writer brain, but like I just picked this up and I'm like, oh, okay, so then Maya's going to die, so that I'm going to cry at the end of this book, was kind of like my immediate assumption. So I was actually really surprised that she was still alive at the end of the story. Like, I just sort of took it for a fact. I'm like, well, this is... Clearly, I'm set up to just be really
yeah.
sad at the end of this for this reason.
Uh-huh.
So it was surprising that she didn't go there.
Well, I think it seems designed to make you have that feeling throughout the book.
Well, no, what I thought was really interesting, the way this was executed, is that you meet the child ghost. And so there is this additional out-of-context character, which is Carlos's uncle, who mm-hmm. has died, and he's mentioned, like, oh, we're going to meet my uncle on the Day of the Dead, and we hang out with him, he's a ghost, it's whatever, it's cool. And you meet the ghost, and you find out that he's a child that has died. And I think that that provided the same kind of catharsis that you would be expecting
mm.
from, like, oh, Maya's going to die. And then you don't have to go through the actual torment
yeah.
of my dying, which I agree would have been a bit maybe on the nose. I'm glad it didn't go there as a work.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I mean, I think I would say that, and I don't even think this is like a criticism, but I feel like this is the right way to handle it for, I think, including younger audiences. I think if I was writing, or if this was being written for an older audience, I think you might want to, like, you know, punch a little harder. Like, you could sort of, not necessarily, I'm not saying kill Maya, but I'm just saying, like, you could have, like, more discussions about other people's sort of tragedies, or you could have other examples of people passing away. Like, you could maybe deal with, like, an elder. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, it could have a little more punch if it was meant for an older audience. I think it was, like, handled at the right intensity because you don't want your young readers, like, in tears every single page of, like, reading this book. So I think it was, like, scaled appropriately, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, there's also another really important way to look at this, right? Raina's thinking of her audience, and in her audience are going to be people just like Kat, which are siblings of someone who has a terminal illness. Mm-hmm. And there's also going to be people like Maya who are going to be reading this book
right.
and trying to come to terms with their own, you know,
right.
medical crises.
Yeah, and so I think in a way, like, yeah, to take it that far would be taking it too far in this instance.
Yeah.
I just think that considering the goal of the work, I think this is the right way to handle it. Absolutely.
Well, I feel like also if Maya were to die within this narrative, like, it would just be one more narrative about someone with a very serious illness where the, like, point of the story is their death, where there's, like, so much more to those people's experiences than just how they die or when they die. It's, like, how they live as well.
Mm.
So, like, providing that kind of story is really important, I think, as well, than just sort of, like, this is a story about the end of someone's life, but this is a story about their life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what is this particular moment in their life.
Yeah.
Or it's a story about death and the cultural context surrounding death,
mm-hmm.
and it allows you so much more access to discuss these different aspects of death that I think is just so deftly handled. Doing this through the lens of the Day of the Dead was really interesting,
mm-hmm.
and provided a really interesting counterpoint, I think, to the central drama of it.
Yeah, it was really interesting that it incorporated the sort of mixed race or mixed culture family, and that they sort of have the... I thought the mother's story was really interesting, where, like, her mother was Mexican, and then she wanted to get into North American stuff so that she never learned to cook her mother's recipes, and she didn't really learn how to speak Spanish. So now she's in this city that's, like, got a very heavy Mexican influence, and they all celebrate the Day of the Dead, and she's sort of familiar with it, but she hasn't really, like, taught her daughters this stuff, and it's, like, something that she's even a little bit fuzzy on, and I thought that was, like, a really interesting approach to take it, like, depicting that cultural, I don't want to call it erosion, but just, like, the way that cultures sort of start to get a little patchwork as we're in, like, a multicultural society, that people, like, take little pieces from their heritage and then new pieces come in, and, yeah, it was really interesting the way it was approached.
Yeah, and I liked that it was a mixed-race character who took it. It made it feel, what can I put this? There's a risk of taking something that's so culturally important to one culture and bringing it onto the face of another.
Mm.
And
mm-hmm.
I thought that it was pretty deftly handled.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really strong tactic.
Yeah.
And I don't want to call it a tactic, necessarily. It's not a narrative choice.
Yeah. Like, Raina's husband is Puerto Rican ancestry, I believe. So she's got, I assume she's got, like, resources to make sure that she's depicting things accurately.
Yeah, she thanks a few people in the
book
as well.
And she's got, like, editors and so on. And also, I noticed, like, this is kind of a sidebar, but I noticed when they actually have the Day of the Dead celebration that there aren't any non-Latino characters who are dressed as the Day of the Dead characters.
I didn't pick that up. That's interesting.
Oh.
Like, they're dressed, they have costumes, they kind of, like, have Halloween costumes. They're thematically appropriate, but the only ones who have, like, the, I'm not sure what it's called, actually, the sugar skull kind of face paint are the Latino characters.
Oh, that's right, yeah, because her friend's just dressed as a devil.
Yeah, which, I mean, I suppose opinions differ on what is appropriate for costumes if you're in a town like this, but given that this is probably for a lot of readers going to be their first exposure to the Day of the Dead, it sort of sets a good foundation for them to then make decisions later.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this was really good. It was actually, the timing was really interesting because around the time I was reading this, I was helping my dad with my grandfather's memorial service, and so that was basically scanning 300 photographs and going through them with my dad and boiling it down to, like, a 15-minute PowerPoint presentation on my grandfather's life. And it became kind of like this sort of celebration of, like, who my grandfather was, and not this sort of sad, like, oh, he's gone now. It was like, well, look at the life that he lived. And it felt very appropriate here. It sort of, I was very intrigued with the idea of the offerenda, the sort of altar to your relatives. And I thought, in Japan, they have the same thing, where they have a little, you know, countertop or shelf somewhere that you have, like, the ashes of your grandparents, and you always, like, put, like, a bowl of rice and an orange out for them once a year when, like, the spirits are supposed to come back for a visit. So they sort of have that idea in Japan as well as in, you know, in Mexico. So it's kind of interesting how different cultures have this idea of, like, acknowledging death, kind of communing with, like, or remembering and, like, thinking about, like, your dead relatives and not just trying to ignore it and pretend it's not happening, which is, I think, something that we suffer from a little bit in North America. So it's really, I think that's even more why I think this is such a poignant work, because I think that, especially again, like reading this with like a child, this is going to start a conversation that you're probably not going to have otherwise, you know, it's like a good lead in to a conversation.
Yeah, I was actually going to say that feels like the conversation isn't very in depth about like what happens after you die. But I feel like this book is supposed to start that conversation, because depending on a particular reader or who their family is or who their parents are, they're going to have different answers for that. So this book only really sets out to start the conversation. It doesn't set out to finish the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. I hadn't really thought of that.
Like I felt it was like that to me. That felt like something that was missing for me as a reader. Like I would enjoy this book more if it had more of a complicated discussion about that. But I know I'm not the target audience for this book. So I appreciate that for the real target audience, that's not where you want to go.
Yeah. And it's not to say that it wasn't enjoyable. It was definitely a story that I enjoyed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We spent quite a bit of time talking about the writing, which I think is expertly handled, very engaging. Do we want to shift and talk about the art a little bit?
Yes.
So we mentioned the colors, which I agree are just so vibrant and beautiful in this work. It seems like there's a really... Well, what really struck me right away as I was getting into this work was the super strong sense of place. Raina says that this was inspired by Half Moon Bay.
Yeah, which she
lived
in. In
Northern California.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. One of the things that she mentioned as I was doing the research for this book was that Day of the Dead is very closely tied to fall, but when you imagine fall in a lot of other places around North America, you have very strong fall color and other things signaling the change of the season, which is not present in Northern California. And so the aspect of the wind and the fog bringing in a very, very strong North Californian aesthetic was something that I thought was really interesting and just set a beautiful background for this whole work.
Yeah, absolutely. It has a really wonderful sense of place, and the drawing style is just really, really top-notch cartooning. Like, it's just expressive and simple and...
Yeah, I love the simplification of the skeleton, since you're scrolling through this part right now. And it's something because it is... Raina is a very, very skilled cartoonist, and the way that she simplified the skeletons represents a very clear stylistic choice. And I think it's interesting that she chose this way to draw them in a way that they're not scary.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this whole, it just goes back to the theme of, like, death is something that happens, but you don't necessarily need to make it out to be this end-of-the-world thing.
Yeah,
it's a natural stage of your life, and the skeletons are cute, and you kind of want to be pals with them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like how Raina is able to, like, simplify the people and the characters so well, and then, like, go way more detailed with the backgrounds, but still have them work together, like, really well, and nothing feels out of place. Yeah, her backgrounds are just so beautiful, whether it's drawing, you know, buildings and derelict old buildings, or like the seascapes and mountainy cliffs.
It's true. It shows just so much range in her work, how she's able to navigate all those spaces. And I liked the bedrooms as well.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, it struck me, there was a scene where Maya, she came back from the hospital, and there's a scene where she's lying in the darkness and she has an IV hooked up to her, and there's just this huge line of pill bottles on her dresser, and it just underscores how much this dominates her life with a simple background detail. And everything just feels very real, even down to the details of them moving into their house and how it's kind of empty, and it's like, well, I guess we live here now. As someone who moved a lot as a kid, it seemed very familiar.
Kat is just like such a perfectly depicted teenager, but like one of the things that stood out to me was like when she first moves into her new bedroom, like the first thing she does is like just put together like a collage and tape that to her wall, and I'm like, yep, every time I had a new room, first thing you gotta do is put that collage up on the wall just to remind yourself who you are.
Raina's cartooning for people is always great. Like even the first mini comics of hers that I remember reading, like they were already at this level, I think. So the only difference in the art style from this book and her previous books that I noticed is the backgrounds. These are her best backgrounds yet, I think.
That's high praise coming from Jonathan Dalton.
Yeah, really gorgeous.
No, but yeah, it's all got, it's the nice little details, I think. It's, you know, it's the little things like the power bar on the ground, you know, and just those little things that a lot of people, like me, would forget in a scene, so everything just feels really lived in and real.
And just the characters, too, like their expressions, their body language, it's so simple, but I think deceptively simple.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's always perfect.
Yeah. The one thing I thought was kind of weird was, well, when you first meet the ghosts, they're just these, like, amorphous kind of snakes. But then when they get close to them, they kind of solidify into these skeletons. And I wasn't sure if that was actually that they were sort of changing shape, or if this was just, like, a shorthand for, like, what they look like from far away versus when they're up close.
The way I understood it was, like, once they got a hold of some breath or, like, the wind or whatever, like, they were able to sort of solidify themselves more.
Okay.
Like, I understood it as, like, anchoring them more
right
to the world, and that was, like, a real change of shape.
Yeah, like,
but that's just how I read it.
Yeah, like, it was a little unclear to me. Like, I wasn't sure if there was a difference between, like a ghost or, like, a skeleton, like, or if they were the same thing, or... Like, some things are ghosts or some things are skeletons, or if they actually, the ghosts become the skeletons, but, I mean, that's, I don't know. I just, like, wasn't sure if she was just doing that as, like, a shorthand for when they're far away or not, or when they were, like, in motion or something.
At least in terms of the narrative, I think it makes sense to do it that way, where visually you learn more about them further on in the story.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, the first time you see one is the first acknowledgement that ghosts are quote-unquote real in this world.
Oh, yeah, and it happens, like, a third of the way into the book, I think.
Yeah, and so it was a surprise to me, because you could certainly have this book and make no... Or you don't have to go down that route, narratively.
Yeah.
And it's a departure, for sure, for Raina's work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I was surprised when ghosts were like, oh, whoa, ghosts are real.
Yeah.
And it was kind of nice to have it just start with this little squiggle, and you're like, whoa.
Yeah. Well, I like how they're introduced to it, too, because they meet Carlos, is that right? Yeah. And then, you know, he makes a reference to, like, the ghost tour. And at first, you know, I mean... You know, Kat is like, oh, this is just a come on. Like, come on, buddy. Like, there's no such thing as ghosts. And so, like, when the ghosts actually show up, it makes it kind of interesting. And then you get the sense that everyone in this town is like, oh, yeah, ghosts. They just, you know, they show up. We hang out.
It's
no big deal.
Ghosts are nice. It's great.
I like also that it's a shared experience amongst the whole town. It's not confined to one cultural group in the town.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the whole town is like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even she makes a friend whose name I forget, but she talks about, like, oh, yeah, the festival, I'm totally going to go. Last time I was talking to this boy, he was super cute, too bad he died in, like, the 18th century or something. Funny quote. And
well, that was...
That's C.O. Young.
C.O. Young, yes. And so I thought it was funny because Kat starts out and she meets Seo, and is it Seo? S-E-O?
S-E-O, yeah.
Yeah. And she's like, finally, someone normal in this town who isn't obsessed with ghosts, and then even Seo is obsessed with ghosts. Which is great. But yeah, like, the whole the whole festival aspect, which I spoke to, is when I was young, it does take over the whole town. It's all you can talk about, and everyone gets excited, and then it's like, yay, festival's here. And this, the kind of repetition of the experience as well makes a big difference, I think, to a community. And a lot of communities that maybe we have today, or I guess this depends on the community you're in. Not every community has this festival atmosphere, which I think could really tie a community together and bring new people in, and this is how we do things here,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's inclusive in a way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can bring new people in and show them, and everyone celebrates together.
It's community building.
Yeah.
If you live in a town like Medicine Hat with no festivals whatsoever, like, maybe there's no community.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know.
That's why I left. Well, I left because my parents moved us, but I'm glad we left.
We're glad you left, too. Yeah, well, you know, I'm in favor of communities. I think the one other thing, kind of getting maybe back to the writing, is I just did really think that Kat and Maya are so well handled. Like, their actions and their behaviors, it all really makes a lot of sense. Like, and also, like, Kat and Carlos, like, the way that they interact with each other and this kind of, like, sort of a burgeoning romance, like, is, like, handled really well. I actually really appreciated the scene when Maya meets Kat's friends, and Kat's friends don't know about Maya, and she's really hurt because Kat hasn't told them that she has this sister. And that makes perfect sense, but then when Kat talks to her later and basically says, like, I'm really sorry, but I just wanted something that was my own, that also made a lot of sense, because you got to imagine, like, when your sister's that sick, like, and you're the oldest, too, like, your parents are stressed out about this, you feel the need to, like, help your parents, to, like, caretake your sibling, you know, if your sister has, like, a bad turn, like, plans get canceled, like, this can derail, like, the whole day for your family. So I could see that wanting to sort of have that little selfish piece that you carve out for yourself, because you just feel like every part of your life has your sister's disease become part of it, right? And
yeah.
I think that made a lot of sense.
It definitely feels, and you feel Kat's pain about this, that her entire world revolves around her sister and her sister's illness.
Mm-hmm.
It's the whole reason that they moved.
Yeah.
And, you know, took her away from all of her friends and everyone she knows.
Mm-hmm.
And she does a great job being like, you know, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we're doing for the good of the family. It's fine. Like, she's not a brat about it, but she does have her own needs, right? And
mm-hmm.
she's trying. She's at a very
yeah.
crucial, sensitive time to be an adolescent. And she's trying to define herself apart from her sister.
Yeah.
While still being there for her sister. It's tough.
Yeah, well, that's
oh,
the thing.
Man.
Well, and
they do such a good job with the...
But that's
such a tough thing.
I appreciate when people write those gray areas, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, no one's completely good or bad, no one's completely right or wrong, it's just, it's people interacting, and it is kind of, like, messy, you know? And
especially
and
writing that for kids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I could theorize about the reason that Raina Telgemeier dominates the New York Times bestseller list, probably it has something to do with how well she writes kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who else writes kids that well and makes comics? I can't think of anyone.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah.
She knows it so innately, like,
mm-hmm.
back to front.
I liked the, I thought the sort of relationship between the two sisters and the ghosts was interesting, how one was very much, like, Kat was really scared of the ghosts, and Maya was really eager to know more about them, and,
mm-hmm.
Like, that there's a scene where... I think it's Carlos asks Maya, like, what do you want to talk to the ghosts about? And Maya says, I just want to know what, like, happens after you die. And Kat's like, well, I think she says something like, I want to, like, learn how to fly, but that's not going to happen anytime soon. And Maya's just...
Oh, man, I forgot about
yeah.
that, because she
and
does learn how to fly.
Yeah.
And then Maya's just like, dying isn't pretend, Kat. Like, it's real.
Yeah.
And that's just, like, such a, ugh.
Yeah.
Makes me cheer
well,
up moment. Because
well,
it's like, she knows... And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's another really nice scene where, like, Kat is really scared of these ghosts, like, it's just, like, a really irrational, innate fear, and Maya's like, what will happen if I die? Like, are you gonna be scared of me, too?
Mm.
And I'm just like, oh,
Yeah.
A nice dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is something that I liked about Maya, is that, you know, she's very much a kid in that she can have those moments where she's like flopping around on the beach laughing her head off with googly eyes, and then she can just flip around and hit you with like words that seem beyond her age, you know, and that's like real kids. Like, everyone thinks kids are just goofy weirdos or something, but like, kids surprise you. Kids will say really, really insightful things.
Yep, they're paying attention.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, great. So, I forget how we got on this thread again, but it was about why Reyna can speak so well to kids and write for kids. And I found this quote in a New Yorker article that I felt really brought everything back together for me. And Reyna says, kids write to her all the time and talk to her like a friend. They don't always make the connection that I'm also a grown-up, she said. She's currently 39. When they realize that I'm their parents' age, it basically sends them to an existential place. They ask her for answers to their personal questions, talking as if they know each other, and she feels a responsibility not to talk to them that way. She doesn't feel that she's in a position to give readers personal advice. But I'm more aware of than ever of what I want to say to kids through my books, she said. What do you want to say? I asked. That it's going to be okay, she said. That everybody, with just a little bit of talking and a little bit of empathy, can find out that they have a lot in common. Her next book will deliver that message in a more earthly form, memoir. So she's going back to memoir for the next book. But I thought, Rina is so, so conscious of her audience. She spends all her time going out and talking to her target demographic, right? And I don't think she sees it as that way. She sees it as a... She must take it as like a personal mission to write for
this
group.
Well, these are her readers, right?
Yeah.
So she's going to make stuff for her readers.
Yeah, and it shows a tremendous amount of care and attention for what she's saying and how she's saying it.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing good stuff. This is excellent cartooning. I would just say, like, I think it's something that as just an adult you can read this and enjoy it. But I would actually say if you have kids, or you have a nephew or a niece, or just anyone who's young and you want to get them into comics, then I would say read this with them. Just sit down and read. It's fun reading comics out loud to kids, so just do that.
Or just grab the nearest Reyna Telgemeier book you can find and chuck it at them.
Yes.
And trust them to figure it out on their own, because they will.
If they haven't already.
Make sure it has rounded corners before you throw it at them.
Okay.
So, final thoughts, recommend?
Definitely recommend.
Absolutely recommend. This book just makes me so excited to read the rest of the things she's going to make in her life. Like,
yes.
I'm so excited about everything she makes.
Well, if you say that drama's better, it's been on my list for a while. I need to prioritize that.
It's so good. It's sort of like a really nice sort of middle school, kind of trying to figure out crushes story, but it has such a good twist at the end.
No spoilers.
Like, yeah, it feels like she's sort of taken all the stuff that she's lived through and, like, encapsulated it into a fiction story, which, I don't know, I think fiction maybe is easier to write. So, but it works really, really well.
Well, I'm excited to read memoir now, so.
Yeah. All right, cool. So, shout-outs and
where to find us.
So, my name is Angela Mellick, and you can find my work at wastedtalent.ca. My mainstream shout-out is for a few Kickstarters which are ongoing right now that I think are of interest. Mm. One is for OMG Check Please, which has been going gangbusters. It's about hockey and a man who bakes pies.
Oh.
It looks wonderful, and I'm excited to get a collected work, but I've had my eye on this work for a while.
Her table was just absolutely getting mobbed at TCAF.
Yeah.
And I didn't
get a chance
to look at it.
That's why I didn't get a copy of the book. I think
it was
sold out by the time I could get there.
Same. So that's why, like, I'm not letting this opportunity pass me by again. Books 1 and 2, they're on Kickstarter right now. Also on Kickstarter.
Thanks for the tip.
No problem, is volume 2 of Oh Human Star, another book that
How did I miss that?
Oh, man.
I have to go home and back this.
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. I can't record the next episode. I got to go home and do some Kickstarter backing.
The third one I want to recommend is the final volume of Unshelved, which after 15 years, my good friends Bill and Jean are ending their serial webcomic about librarians. And since we're in the library, I know our library patrons will have interest in this work. So congratulations to them for ending their long-running serial and their Kickstarter. It's online right now.
Oh, awesome. Cool. All right. Well, I'm Jeff Ellis, and you can find my work at jeff-ellis.ca. And my shout-out will be for The Adventures of Laser Moose and Rabbit Boy by Doug Savage. A signed copy was given to me on my birthday, and I read the first chapter with my nephew, and it was delightful. My nephew is 3, and he had me read the same chapter like 5 times.
Okay, I'm Jonathan Dalton. You can find my current comic at phobos-comic.com. And my shout-out is going to be for Family Man by Dylan McConis, which I don't think I've shouted out before on the Trade Waiters, despite the fact that I've been reading it as it is released on the internet since the beginning. It is a webcomic that might be about werewolves, although we haven't actually seen the werewolves yet, many, many chapters in. But even without werewolves, it's pretty great. It's about the birth of the university system in Europe in, like, the Age of Enlightenment, and an illicit romance between a Jewish atheist professor and the librarian daughter of the head of the school.
I'm Kay Gross. You can find my work at... my currently updating webcomic is lunarmalodies.com. I think I'm in the 20s somewhere page-wise on that, but up to page 95 will be available on my Patreon before this episode is up. So that is another way you can read that. And I guess my shout-out this week is my pal Jasmine Schuett. Just put out a great little mini-comic called The Decadent James Brandy. It's kind of a weird character study of this very decadent human being. It's really funny, so I'm not sure if it's online, but I think it will be eventually, or if you're at Kansing in November, you can pick up a copy. That's very funny.
I bought my copy, and I agree.
It's great. Funny, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I bought my copy, but it's in my to-read pile.
Jonathan.
Sorry, my to-read pile is a year deep. It's the Trade Waiters' fault. I keep reading Trade Waiters' books instead.
Don't blame the podcast.
Okay, what's our next book going to be?
That's a good question.
It's going to be...
We are reading Sacred Heart by Liz Suburbia.
The Trade Waiters is presented by Cloudscape Comics. We'd like to thank the Vancouver Public Library for letting us record in their Inspiration Lab, and to Sleep for the music. You can find us at cloudscapecomics.com, tradewaiters.tumblr.com, and you can find us at Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud.